Shalom. Thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. Come spend the Sabbath with us. Beth Emmanuel meets every Saturday at 11:30 a.m. We meet at 828 3rd Street in beautiful Hudson, Wisconsin, only 25 minutes from downtown St. Paul. For more information, click on the Services tab at BethEmmanuel.org.
Last Sabbath, do you remember? Back to last Sabbath. I asked you a simple question last Sabbath. So, on what day of the week did Yeshua die? It seems like an obvious thing. We studied the matter out. We considered the evidence in the Gospels and in church tradition. We even carefully looked at the 3 days and three nights of the sign of Jonah. And we determined that, contrary to some opinions and alternate theories, he died on a Friday. In fact, turns out, sheerly by coincidence, that particular Friday just happened to be Good Friday. Not only that, but even more amazing, the day that he rose was Easter. Yeah. Well, you're running a little slow here. Anyway, this week, I'm going to try again. We're going to try another approach. I have a different question. Similar question. On what day of the month did our master die? And by day of the month, I mean on what day of the biblical calendar? The biblical month of Nisan. Was it the 13th day or the 14th day or the 15th day? You know what I'm saying? Like that. What day of the biblical lunar month did he die? Maybe this seems like a hopelessly irrelevant question, just like a matter of historical trivia, like who cares? And perhaps it is, but the thing is, every year around Passover, I get questions about the timing of the Passion Week. Every year, people start, they start emailing me and they want to understand how the story of the death and resurrection of Yeshua fits together with the biblical calendar and the festival of Passover. And frankly, there is a lot of bad teaching. There's a lot of misinformation in the Hebrew Roots movement, and everyone has a theory. And, as I explained last week, I myself used to teach this, I used to teach Good Thursday, but I've since abandoned that idea because it didn't hold water. As we saw last week, it didn't hold water when it didn't stand up to scrutiny. So there's a lot of bad teaching out there. There's a lot of questions about the timing of the death of the Messiah. And it all stems from a discrepancy between the way the Gospel of John and the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke tell the story of the Last Supper and the day of the crucifixion. And people tend to get, passionate about their theories on how to solve this and maybe a little belligerent about it. So we'll do that. We'll get a little belligerent today, a little self-righteous. And it can be one more thing that we enjoy fighting with each other about. One more thing to add to the thing that religious people fight about, religious things. Anyway, the point is, here's the issue. I'm beating around the bush a bit, but here's the issue. You may or may not be aware of this, but there's a discrepancy between the Gospel of John and the Synoptic Gospels. It's a pretty big one. Well, it depends on if you care or not, depends on how big it is, I guess. Some Bible teachers try to smooth it over, or cover it up, deny its existence even. And it doesn't really help the situation. Usually we can get away with it because Christian readers who are not familiar with the details of the celebration of Passover and the timing of the biblical calendar never notice the problem at all. So thanks to ignorance about the Torah, most Christian readers just don't see the conflict. It's not an issue. But here's the conflict. When you're reading it from a Messianic Jewish perspective, this problem, it becomes very obvious. It becomes acute. And in the Gospel of John, here's the issue. Gospel of John, Yeshua has his Last Supper the night before Korban Pesach, the night before the sacrifice of the Passover lambs. In other words, the night of the night that begins the 14th day of Nisan. So To put it this yet another way, Yeshua conducts the Last Supper a full 24 hours before the Jewish people sit down to eat a Passover Seder meal. Right, that's John. It's John. So it says in John 13, 1, I mean, you can see this yourself, John chapter 13, it says, before the festival of Passover. And then we get that narrative, John 13 through 17. It's the Last Supper in John. So he's crucified then in John, according to John. He's crucified the next day as the Passover lambs are sacrificed in the temple courts. And that night, the holy day, and I'm going to use the word Yom Tov, okay? Yom Tov. Two very simple Hebrew words. Yom means day. Tov, good. So it's good day. It's the equivalent of holiday. It's the holiday. The Yom Tov is the Sabbath that begins the 7 days of unleavened bread, of Passover. All right, so we use the word Yom Tov, and you know what it means. It's a special Sabbath. Not the weekly Sabbath. It's a special Sabbath that starts the festival, okay? So according to John, that night, as he's entombed, the Yom Tov, the first day of unleavened bread, begins, which corresponded that year to the weekly seventh-day Sabbath, and it began at sunset. Yeshua is buried just before sunset, before Yom Tov, Nisan 15, right at the time when everybody now is sitting down to eat their Passover Seder meals. And for that reason, you can read this in the Gospel of John. You look at it, just John, forget about the others, you just read John. The Gospel of John never mentions the Last Supper or anything in connection with Passover, except to say that it was before Passover. So John never calls it a Seder. He doesn't call it a Seder. He doesn't say it was a Passover meal at all. The Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, tell a totally different story. In the Synoptic Gospels, Yeshua sends two disciples to sacrifice a Passover lamb and prepare an upper room. He prepare a Seder meal in an upper room, and it's the 14th day of Nisan. And that night, the 15th begins at sunset. The Yom Tov has already begun when Yeshua and his disciples recline around the table, and he says, I have eagerly desired to eat this Pesach, this Passover lamb, with you. And the Synoptic Gospels depict the entire meal as a Passover Seder. So that's the discrepancy. John versus the three Synoptic Gospels. And you might think, well, the weight of evidence is with the Synoptic Gospels. After all, there's three of them. You know, three against one, right? So everything shall be established by two or three witnesses. You know, you got two or three witnesses. That's Matthew, Mark. Three is Luke, where, against John, right? Well, the problem is that they're called Synoptic because they're all coming from a same source text. So they're, even though there's three of them, they're actually only one witness. They count for one in this argument. So it's really one against one. Sorry. Anyway, the synoptic telling of the story then implies that the Yom Tov of Nisan 15, the special Sabbath of the first day of Passover, has already begun, and you know, at the time of the Last Supper then, in the Synoptic Gospels, we call it the Last Seder. Accordingly, Yeshua is arrested on the holy day, on the Yom Tov. He is tried in the Sanhedrin, or by the Sadducees, in the house of Caiaphas, on the Yom Tov. His witnesses are called to testify against him on the Yom Tov. He's brought before Pilate on the Yom Tov. He's traded for Barabbas on the Yom Tov. He's crucified on the Yom Tov. He's removed from the cross on the Yom Tov. He's prepared for burial on the Yom Tov. A member of the Sanhedrin comes out and purchases a shroud for him on the Yom Tov. And then they close the tomb. As they close the tomb, the second day of Passover begins, according to this version of the story, coinciding with the onset of the weekly Sabbath. And so you get two Sabbaths back to back, Yom Tov and Saturday. That's how it goes in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Now, does everybody see the discrepancy now? Okay. Here's the thing. Prior to studying the Torah, prior to learning Torah, who would ever notice this problem? And if you did notice, even if you did notice, who would care? You know? I mean, that's all done away with anyway, right? From a Messianic Jewish perspective, this discrepancy is a big problem. It's an important issue. And scholars have recognized that, and they've puzzled over it ever since the four Gospels began circulating, I think. And over the years, there have been, you know, many attempts to try to harmonize this, to fix this argument. I mean, you have the Gospels disagreeing with each other on something so basic. You can't even agree on the day that Jesus died. That seems significant. Most scholars at this point have given up, thrown in the towel, and come to the point of just admitting, I mean, here's the position, the academic consensus has reached this place today to say, well, John tells it one way, Matthew, Mark, and Luke tell it another way. And we're just going to leave it. Let them each tell their own story. That's the academic consensus. But that's no fun. Where's the fun in that? So let me give you some examples of how people have tried to solve this problem in the past. In his volume, his three-volume commentary, Death of the Messiah, Raymond Brown categorizes and catalogs all the different attempts at explaining this, at least the popular ones, all the different harmonizations and reconciliations for the discrepancy. You know, attempts to rearrange the sequence of events, usually accepting the synoptic version and then trying to shove John's, you know, you got to accept one or the other and then try to push the other one into the one you accepted. You know, you just got to kind of try and, you know, bend this, and if it'll bend and see if you can squeeze this down. And anyway, so he catalogs all of these, and, you know, usually we're trying to get John to agree with the synoptics, but in order to do that, you have to, I mean, what do you do with like John 18:28 that mentions the day that the master stood before Pilate? The priesthood would not enter the praetorium. Why? Because they didn't want to become defiled so that they would miss the Seder that night. They didn't want to miss eating the Passover lamb. It says so in John 18:28. That means the Seder hasn't happened yet. Passover, it means that the Yom Tov hasn't begun yet. And then there's these theories, you know, we find theories that try to explain that both John and the Synoptic Gospels, they're both correct, because actually, back in those days, there were two Passover celebrations, you know. The Galileans had one day and the Judeans had another day. Or not true. You know, it's like there's all this made-up stuff. We find all these crazy ideas that are just trying to fix the problem. They have no basis in they're fictional answers to a non-fictional problem, you know? One theory claims the Synoptic Gospels were not actually describing a Passover Seder meal, you know, but it was a meal before Passover. It's a preparing for Passover Seder meal. That contradicts Mark 14:12, where it says, on the first day of unleavened bread, that's On the first day of unleavened bread, when they sacrificed the Passover lamb, this is Nisan 14, Korban Pesach, his disciples said to him, where will you have us go and prepare for you to eat the Pesach, to eat the Passover? Or Matthew 26:18, I will keep Pesach at your house with my disciples. Or Luke 22:15, when he finally sits down, he says, I've earnestly desired to eat this Pesach with you before I suffer. And you have to understand the word Pesach refers specifically to the Passover lamb. It's the sacrifice. So, Yeshua told his disciples, according to these three Gospels, he told his disciples to go to the temple, sacrifice a lamb, roast it, bring it to the upper room, and prepare a meal. And according to these three Gospels, you know, that's what they did. And our master and his disciples ate more than just bread and wine that night. You know, they ate a Passover meal, the Passover sacrifice. Oh, have you ever heard the Qumran theory? The Qumran theory is sometimes gets a lot of attention because the Qumranis had a different calendar. They were Essenes. They followed a solar version of the biblical calendar. So it turns out if you were an Essene, you always kept Passover on a Tuesday night. Every year, it was your Seder night fell on a Tuesday. So some people say, well, you know, you sure it was an Essene. Or he's hanging out with the Essenes. Think about this, though. If that was the case, then he had his Seder on a Tuesday night, you know, you know, how long is he going to be? Like, if he gets arrested that night and crucified the next day, we're going to have him down for like 4 or 5 days, you know, before we get out of the tomb. It just doesn't work. You can't. That's even worse. That solution creates far more problems than it solves. In the end, Raymond Brown examines the internal evidence to just say, let's see which one seems the most probable. And he finds that the chronology presented in the Gospel of John best fits the evidence. He finds several problems in the story in Matthew and Mark and Luke, which make it difficult to accept the way that Matthew, Mark, and Luke are telling the story, that all these things happened on a Yom Tov, you know, the special Sabbath of Passover. It's a problem from a historical perspective. And imagine religious Jews, first century Jews, religious Jews, even if they are Sadducees, I don't care. Religious Jews carrying out a trial, calling witnesses, issuing a verdict on a Yom Tov. It's not possible. Participating in a Roman court procedure on a holy day. It's not a possibility. Purchasing supplies, purchasing a tomb, purchasing a shroud, purchasing spices, preparing spices on a Yom Tov. It's not a possibility. You know, all these sorts of things, all these things. And then there's external evidence as well. You can talk about briefly. You know, like the Gospel of Peter, the apocryphal Gospel of Peter. It's not in your Bible. Don't look for it. It never made the final cut. It was written in the late 2nd century. Well, it could have been the middle 2nd century. We don't know. It was lost for many, many years, forgotten gospel. It's a sizable portion of it rediscovered in the 19th century. It really has no historical credibility as a reliable source or anything like this, but at least it tells us one thing. It tells us how the Passion narrative chronology was understood in the middle of the 2nd century. And in so doing, you know, here, I'll read it to you, a little passage from it, where it records a conversation between Pilate, imagine Pilate talking to Herod Antipas. It says, when Joseph of Arimathea knew they were about to crucify him, he came to Pilate and asked for the master's body for burial. Pilate sent word to Herod asking for the body. Herod said, Brother Pilate, even if no one had asked for him, we would have buried him, since the Sabbath is dawning. For it is written in the Torah that the sun must not set on the one who has been killed. And he delivered him over to the people the day before the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So according to this passage, according to the apocryphal Gospel of Peter, the execution took place on the eve of Passover, that is, the afternoon of the 14th of Nisan, and it was Erev Shabbat, that is, it was Friday before Sabbath began. All right, I know that's not in the Bible. The Bible doesn't really say that. But once again, that's how the believers in the second century understood the events to have transpired. Another source comes from the Talmud. In the Talmud, Tractate Sanhedrin, it says, on the eve of Passover, Yeshu was hung. He was hung on the eve of Passover. And one manuscript says, actually words it differently, it says, on Erev Shabbat and Erev Pesach. So it was the eve of Passover and it was an Erev Shabbat. Yeshu was hung. So if these sources are correct, if the Gospel of John is correct, Yeshua could not have celebrated a Seder with his disciples the night before he died. So Raymond Brown and most scholars who have studied the issue advise, they say, you know what? You have to let it go. Let it go. Let Matthew, Mark, and Luke go on this one. Let let the Passover Seder, the last Passover Seder, let it go, right? You know, as I'm working on this sermon yesterday morning, curious thing happened. I receive an email, you know, once a day or so from Biblical Archaeology Review called Bible History Daily. And I got this email as I was working on the sermon. It's April 11th, 2014. Bible History Daily. I'm sure you can still find it on the internet if you go look for it. It comes as this very well-written, thoughtful article on this very topic. You know, on this very topic. Coincidence? Well, 'tis the season. But the article by someone named Jonathan Clowns, it was titled, Was Jesus' Last Supper a Seder? So, you know, I'm sure if you Googled that, you could find it online somewhere. Long story short, long article short, I should say. Clowns, he looks at all the evidence, and he comes to the conclusion that we just have to follow John's chronology, because the synoptic chronology does not make sense. So the academic world is ready to throw out the last Seder presented in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But that doesn't work for us in Messianic Judaism. We don't have the luxury of just throwing out three Gospels. Fortunately, we don't need to. As you know, at First Fruits of Zion and here at Beth Emanuel, with Aaron's help, we've translated a lot of Rabbi Yechiel Tzvi Lichtenstein's 19th century Hebrew commentary on the Gospels. Yes. And in that Hebrew commentary on the Gospels, the Evan Zohar, the Rabbi Lichtenstein, proposes a harmonization. It's a harmonization unlike any I've ever seen anywhere else. And what he does is, through this harmonization, he retains both the synoptic version and the Johannine version without dealing violence to either one. Now, his explanation is speculative. No question, it's speculative. But he bases his speculation on solid Jewish sources, and he presents how it could have happened, and in fact how it did happen once, that there were 2 days of Passover back to back. Perhaps, although again it's speculative and you can't prove it, perhaps in the year that the Master died. The problem with this explanation is it's highly technical. It requires a high level of biblical literacy and halakhic literacy. It would require you to have an extensive knowledge of the background of how the Jewish calendar works and how it's reckoned and how the holidays fit onto the calendar for me to explain it to you. It's beyond the scope of, you know, frankly, it's beyond the scope of most gospel readers. And it's definitely more complicated than I can present to you in a few minutes this morning. But I've written it out. I mean, it's available. It's in the Chronicles of the Messiah commentary on the Gospels. So, I mean, we have the material. We have the material if you want to see it sometime. More likely, you're thinking, who cares? This is a little too technical for me. And if that's what you're thinking, you're probably right, you know. But for those of us who are trying to relive the story of the Master's death and resurrection through the annual celebration of Passover, it's really important. So I'm going to give you the thumbnail version of Lichtenstein's explanation. Lichtenstein explains that in the days of the Master, the Pharisees and the Sadducees had a great debate about how to observe Passover. Yes, we knew this. The debate centered around the counting of the Omer, right? That is the day that the first fruits of the barley are brought and offered in the temple, the day that begins the 49-day count-off to Pentecost, to Shavuot. And here's the debate. The Torah says that the priest should offer the first fruits of the barley on the day after the Sabbath, at Passover time. But the Torah does not specify what it means by the words, the day after the Sabbath. That's in Leviticus 23:11. You're thinking, well, the day after the Sabbath is obviously Sunday, right? I mean, that's what the Sadducees said. The Pharisees said, no, it means the day after Yom Tov. And since Yom Tov can fall on different days of the week, you know, Yom Tov could fall on Tuesday. That would mean Wednesday if that's the way it fell that year. So the question is, the day after the Sabbath, does that mean after the Yom Tov of Passover, Nisan 15, or does it mean the weekly Sabbath that after the weekly Sabbath that falls during the 7 days of Passover, Shabbat Kol and Moed? The Pharisees say, it means Nisan 16, the day after Yom Tov. It's always going to be a Nisan 16. The Sadducees said, no. It means Sunday. It means Sunday, the day after the weekly Sabbath, the day after Shabbat Chol Moed, during Pesach. Okay, so whenever you have an argument between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, who wins? Pharisees. Pharisees always win. Do you know why the Pharisees win? Nobody likes Sadducees. That's why. I mean, the multitudes, as it always says in the Gospels, the multitudes were with the Pharisees. The Pharisees won these types of arguments because they had the strength of tradition behind them, and they had the popular opinion of the masses, and the Sadducees were afraid. You know, there's the story of when the Sadducean king, I think it was King Yanni, tried to pour the water of the water libation off the side of the altar on his feet, and everybody stoned him with their etrogues, you know. You just didn't get away with breaking the tradition. So when the Sadducean priests tried to do things the Sadducean way, the people would revolt and insist that they'd stick with the tradition. They literally forced the Sadducean priests to keep Pharisaic tradition. Josephus makes that very clear. So Liechtenstein comes and he says, in the year that our master died, Erev Pesach, Nisan 14, must have fallen on a Thursday. In the year that we believe Yeshua died, the year 30 Common Era, 40 years before the destruction of the temple. And if we check the lunar calendar, it turns out it could have. It potentially could have that year. Liechtenstein says he believes it fell on a Thursday that year. But the Sadducees hired false witnesses to forestall the month by 1 day. And they used bribes to influence the Sanhedrin to delay declaring the new moon by 1 day. Therefore, this is very clever, they forced Passover to start a day later that year. In fact, this is quite beautiful, actually, quite brilliant. They forced Passover Eve, Nisan 14, to fall on Friday that year, making Nisan 15, the day that the Pharisees said is the day the Sabbath of Leviticus 23:11, they made it fall on a Saturday, which was what the Sadducees wanted in the first place. That way, they got to keep their cake and eat it too. They were able to count the Omer and celebrate Shavuot the way they wanted to because they forced the calendar to move up a day so that the Yom Tov and the weekly Sabbath would coincide, therefore fulfilling both the Pharisaic opinion and the Sadducean opinion, nobody gets pelted with anything. This way, they forced the whole population, just for that year, to keep Shavuot on the day they wanted. Of course, what's going to happen? Some people will reject the ruse. Some people say, uh-uh, we saw the moon. So yeah, you're always going to have these types. You know, you always have, but the majority, of course, is going to submit to the rule of the Sanhedrin, which is the, you know, that's the law. You go with the decision of the court. And Deuteronomy says you don't go with the decision of the court. You know, it's bad news for you. But nevertheless, you're going to have some Pharisees who are going to say, we're not going with the Sadducees. Tonight is Passover. Doesn't matter what they say. You always have these, right? What did our master do? Well, this is more speculation. Liechtenstein speculates that because Yeshua knew he would not be able to keep the Seder with his disciples on Friday night, he was going to be occupied elsewhere, he took advantage of the fact that some Pharisees were keeping Passover a day early, according to their own reckoning of the moon, and he went to the home of someone who was doing that so that he could keep a Seder a day early. Now, Lichtenstein points out that this is not permissible under ordinary circumstances. Ordinarily, one should always follow the majority and follow the authorities that determine the Jewish calendar, as Yeshua always did in every other situation. But on this occasion, because he had no other way to keep a final Seder with his disciples, he joined the Pharisaic schism, which was holding their Seder a day before the one declared by the Sadducees. And because of the calendar problem that year, he was able to do so. I'll read you a passage from this commentary. The Evan Zohar writes, "Yeshua did this rightly, for by the principles of the Pharisees, both of these days were valid as holy days, because the sanctification of the pilgrimage feast depends upon the court and upon the people of Israel, for it is Israel that sanctifies the times. Even if they err or act presumptuously, the day is still holy." And Yeshua's disciples understood this. It was only because his hour was near and he wanted to fulfill the commandment of Passover that he joined himself with this sect to eat his Passover on the fifth day in the evening, Thursday evening. And if not this, he would have waited until the next day in line with the majority of Israel. That is why I believe his disciples imagined that he was asking Judas to buy things needed for the feast, as it appears to me in John 13:29. For the main feast was the next day, in the evening, for the majority of Israel. Understand this. It appears that divine providence foresaw that in the year of Yeshua's death, it would occur like this in Israel, so that the master would eat the Passover with his disciples and would fix a meal on the holy evening. And in addition to this, he would also be killed on the eve of Passover, thus himself becoming the Passover lamb, as Paul writes in 1 Corinthians, and as John writes in his gospel. Lichtenstein finds support for this theory from the Talmud, which describes how one year, on one occasion, the Sadducees did bribe witnesses to manipulate the date of Passover to get their way. Lichtenstein says that this is further explained by Rashi and in the Tosafot on that passage. If you're interested, you can study his argument out further in Chronicles of the Messiah. But anyway, the point is, in summary, thanks to the machinations of the Sadducean-controlled Sanhedrin, the people of Israel were divided that particular year. Most people were keeping the calendar according to the rule of the Sanhedrin, as the Torah instructs, but some Pharisees were sitting it out. They were refusing. They were keeping the Passover according to their own reckoning. The Synoptic Gospels, then, are reporting the minority sectarian Pharisaic chronology for Passover that year, whereas John is reporting the accepted majority reckoning endorsed by the Sanhedrin that year. And you get your cake and eat it too. You get your John and synoptics too. Lichtenstein's explanation is probably not bulletproof, but it has the advantage of being the most reasonable thing that I have heard so far. It's the only one that I have ever heard that has support from rabbinic literature and the Gospels. It has the advantage of bringing Matthew, Mark, and Luke and John together. It's like the Beatles getting back together. We don't have to throw out either testimony. It allows us to accept that Yeshua did keep a Passover Seder with his disciples, and he did suffer and die on Passover, only a few hours before the majority of the people of Israel celebrated their Seder that year. So in terms of our own observance of the Passover, then, it implies that we should keep the Seder in remembrance of our Master as he instructed us to do on the conventional Seder night along with the rest of Israel. But we should also keep in mind that in the year that he died, he kept his Seder a night early. Now, back to that question, does it matter? I think it does. I think it matters. Because what's really at stake here is the integrity and the reliability of the gospel testimony. It matters because our Master told us, do this in remembrance of me. And if we don't know what he was doing when he said, do this in remembrance of me, well, we're going to be at a loss to carry out those instructions. But if he was keeping a Seder when he said, do this in remembrance of me, then we are obligated to keep the Seder in his memory, which is precisely what we intend to do Monday night.
Take on my yoke and learn from me and find rest for your soul.